Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 228 for February 7th. Time fencing, crowdsourcing, and the future of Ford. Watch Auto Line After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Well, here we are for another Autoline After Hours, and I got to tell everybody who's watching and listening right now, this winter has been brutal. We're going through an unbelievable winter with piles of snow. So the traffic is really crazy here. One of the guests coming here tonight, Lisa Priddle, is stuck in that traffic. So we're going to run the show a little bit backwards compared to the way we normally do. So some introductions still at hand. Lindsay Brook is joining us tonight.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing terrific. From Automotive Engineering Magazine. And we've got Nancy Gioia from the Ford Motor Company, and we're going to get into what you're doing these days, too, because I got to ask, Nance, you know, it sounds to me like you had been doing all the electric cars,
right.
Plug-ins, hybrids, but it's beyond that now, right? You're into connectivity and,
yep.
And what?
Global electrical connectivity and user interface. So it's really, from the inside of the vehicle to the outside, and also connectivity. Strategy and planning for connectivity as a company. So when you think about it, there's connectivity to the customer and the car, but there's car to car, there's car to company, car to others, and then it's really how do you make all that work together?
What do you mean, car to company, car to others?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things with connectivity, right, is consumers expect to be able to come in, use devices safely and securely, hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. This is one of the challenges, right, moving forward so we can enable the customer experience that they want to have safely and securely, especially if you're driving. But then vehicle-to-vehicle communication is already starting to be experimented with. You know, a lot about autonomous, well, it's going to take several years before true autonomous vehicles.
Nissan says 2020.
Well, yeah. You know, and you know, I think we're certainly going to see continued progression of autonomous, semi-autonomous, leading towards autonomous. But there's a lot of infrastructure, there's regulation, there's policies, there's standards to really make that work on a regional, local basis, regional or global basis.
But then Nissan just. Because that was my question. Are you talking semi-autonomous? Are you talking fully autonomous? So at the auto show, they had big signs, fully autonomous, 2020.
Well, and you know, our view is consumers are going to look for everything, and it has to be affordable, it has to be safe, it has to work in the environment, it has to be understandable to them. You know, I mean, you have to have trust and confidence, right? This is yourself and your family members. So we're really excited of one of the experiments right here down the road in Ann Arbor, right? And Ford amongst others, but we're very pleased. We've got vehicle to vehicle interface going on, vehicle to.
So is that part of what you're working on, the V2V stuff as well?
Some of it is the V2V, and working on what do we need to have in our strategy, our plans, our products. How do we work with our dealers, our communities? I mean, there's a lot to figure out in that space. So from a company on connectivity, boy, if we can, and again, it's all about trust and it's all about security, but so much of the car has software on it nowadays. What do you
10
get?
Million lines, isn't that the line?
Oh, at least.
10 million lines of code?
Well, yeah. On our Fusion hybrids, we can pull 10 terabytes of information, data, every 30 minutes. Now, think about that. Now, that's data.
I can't.
That's data. If we wanted to pull it, and if we could pull the things that were all there and do it real time every. Now, obviously, we don't need all of that, nor would we. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But there are great opportunities for whether it's traffic flow. You ever use Waze? Where you have the social, Waze is a navigation thing. You're going down the road, you sign into Waze if you want.
No, And then it's social media too?
It's a crowdsourcing of traffic.
Well, have you heard of Vine?
Yeah.
Vine's the same thing.
Same thing. So you're going down, you see an accident. Now you have to be, if you accurately display that, you can get rewards and things like that. But what is it? It's basically everybody on that road in that little sub-community helping transportation be better. And so traffic avoidance, better lanes to go, even just safety. I saw something that wasn't good, right? You know, so that is the kind of thing that as information becomes available, it really helps consumers with their driving experience. If we're monitoring or helping over time vehicle health report, giving customer feedback on how they could drive more efficiently and effectively, only if they opt in. And that's one of the big things, privacy, security of data. You have to do this in a way where people are choosing to participate and want that feedback because guess what? They find it valuable. Not because you're trying to use it and sell their data for something else, but because it's valuable to them and we work on their behalf to help that experience be better. And that's where connectivity is going. It's your phone, your tablet there, John. I mean, yeah. If you've enabled certain programs, there's a lot of data that is available. It's not about market. From our perspective, it's not about marketing in the car to the customer. It's about enabling a better transportation experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's, and how different companies choose to do this, that will be dependent upon their brand. From our perspective, safe, secure, following our brand pillars, you know, safe, green, quality, and smart. That smart is on the behalf of the customer. And it's also then, you know, great company, great products, better, you know, healthy company, and then we can work on a better world, right? And all of that, you know, it just really does feed. You know, it's not just a line. You know, we really run the company that way. So it's good.
So in your role, Nancy, when you're driving in traffic and you pull up to a traffic light, four-way intersection, everybody's stopped, and you look around like we all do, and you see people just completely engrossed in their own iPhones, you know, answering texts, et cetera. Hello.
Okay, we got to interrupt everything because Elisa Priddle is now in the studio with us.
Oh, my goodness. After inching along.
Have a seat.
And Lisa, thank you for arriving right now.
Did I get you out of a jam?
Yeah, okay, so our scenario is to hit Ford's head of connectivity. What do you think in terms of solutions for, you know, we have what the auto companies can bring, and that's a ton of technology in terms of radar, LIDAR, cameras, making the vehicles very smart, giving us this 360-degree observation post in the cabin. Very safe, you know, surrounded by safe materials, crash-resistant, the whole thing. But then we can bring in devices that are generally distractive and is much, really, unless the phone companies would have some sort of sensor that when you get in a car, it completely disables the phone, which I don't think is likely to happen. How do we mitigate that situation of safe car, connected car, V2G and V2V is really giving the driver a lot of good information. You can take a lot of stuff off the CAN bus, but at the end of the day, I can bring my phone into the car and perhaps be hurt because of that.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, at Ford, one of the big things we've got is hands on the wheel, eyes on the road, right? And what that means is we want a voice experience that's so exceptional that if you ask for directions or you ask for something in that drive experience, it enables it and it does it accurately. Now, you know, we're pretty darn proud of Sync and a lot of things that have occurred with that. There's a lot of learnings and it's getting better and better. Mm. So I think our view is we need to be, and again, our pillars, safe, green, safe, you know, quality and smart. It's really taking technologies, working with partners, and making that experience better and better so you'd never want to touch your phone. There are some things in the car you shouldn't be doing. And, you know, what we want to do is enable the things that you do want to do, especially in the driver. Now, mm-hmm. if you're in the back seat, you don't want to disable the phone, right? Because that's the back seat.
Right.
And if you have a 2-year-old who's watching or a 4-year-old watching their video, you don't want to say you can't watch it in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the driver's seat that's critical.
It's the driver's seat that's fundamental.
Right.
It's so paramount. And even when you're at a stoplight, you know, I mean, you know, you see somebody say, oh, I was at a light. I could. No, you shouldn't.
I know.
So what we want to do is enable the experience. And there are things that, and you know what? This is going to be research. This is going to be work together. And, you know, clearly what I love about this is there's no industry in the world, other than, you know, beyond, I mean, automotive has so much technology, so many smart people. That, you know, we're all focused on this. We're focused on making that experience better and better. And you know, what a wonderful place to innovate. You know, so if you want a cool job, come to automotive. We've got some really cool problems to solve.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I mean, you guys really put yourselves on the map with Sync, made yourselves a technology leader. But then, of course, some might suggest maybe it went too far, too fast with the second generation mm-hmm. of my Ford Touch. And obviously you've had criticisms and had some third-party quality hits because of it. Was it a case of sort of being so buoyed by the success, maybe going a little too fast for consumers?
I think clearly we've got a lot of lessons learned. And what we've done is we've incorporated those and from the launch and moving forward, we've released updates, we've improved the system. What does that make us? A consumer products company, right? Because there isn't, you know, the original iPhone and other products, not, you know, you launch and you make improvements, you launch and make improvements. I think this is a new paradigm for the auto industry. And what we can't do is entrench in fear, and I think this is one of the things that Ford we're looking at is learn quick, move forward, make it better. Learn quick, make it better. So our connectivity strategy is really all around enabling a great connected consumer experience that they can trust, that helps their lives be better and their transportation experience in and out of the car, and it gets better over time. That is a real game changer for the industry.
Now, you've also, when you were first coming out with Sync, it was considered very innovative because you were looking at an OnStar-type model with WingCast and having embedded, and you decided not to do that and use the phone.
Right.
But you're now, as you're bringing out new products, you're putting the embedded modem back into the vehicles.
So. There's no question. You know, when we launched Sync One, we had a absolute broadened strategy that was game-changing. And we are still very much of the view that there are a large number of things, especially consumer-facing elements, that broadened device does the best. Until you maybe end up with personal cloud connections that are so fabulous, you don't even bring in your device anymore. It's because the cloud just is immediately connected, or you don't worry about it. But so we think the broadened device still does certain things really, really well. We also see now that you have the cloud, now that you can handle data and communications at a speed level, now that data can be handled in an unstructured way going forward. So there's been a lot of technology from 2007 when we launched to now. We see going forward, it's going to be that combined built-in and broadened strategy. So as we look at certain features and functions on behalf of the customer, they may be better over time done built-in, and then they're still going to be combined with brought-in or beamed-in.
Like the automatic start of your car, that kind of thing.
So, you know, I think it's going forward, it's that combination. We're actually really, so we're going to build on the strength we have with the brought-in, add in more built-in, and then, you know, really with the computing power, do that in a way that's even more affordable. Because the other thing that's happened out there is, you know, things like, you know, subscription fatigue and other things, right? So we have to make this work for the customers in that total business case.
How far are we away from the vehicle becoming, the system becoming anticipatory? We've got some of that capability in the vehicle right now. We talked about all-wheel drive systems.
Right.
And thinking of the capability to let the car know that up over the hill there's oil on the road or there's ice or something like that, to then let the car know that back off the throttle, change the gearing, maybe apply the brakes, that sort of thing. And I'm thinking GPS satellite connections to the car would probably enable something like that.
There's a lot of... We think, you know, experience has to be contextual for customers. So when you say anticipatory, it has to be in the right context of what's around you, what's going on around you.
Right.
And there are a ton, there's a ton of work going on. So you're already today, there are things we do that make the drive experience better and better. And, you know, we're just at the tip of the iceberg. With the rapid data flow back and forth, and the processing capability we can use in the cloud, the beauty is you don't have to do it all on board anymore. You used to have tons of memory and put such strong processors on board to do some of this. You just couldn't, the car wouldn't be affordable. Now, with good connection to the cloud, the ability to pull in navigation, pull in altitude, longitude, weather conditions, your typical drive patterns and behaviors in the future, if you're willing to share that, you know, customer has to opt in.
Right.
And, you know, starting to combine all of these to say, wow, okay, and or even looking at your calendar in the future, knowing that you're going to come to John's show, and guess what? This traffic, you better leave 20 minutes early because I'm already going to tell you, you've got to, you know, so that's anticipating where you're going based on looking at your schedule. All of these things are becoming more and more possible. What we need to do is move in that direction in the affordable way and in a way that's not creepy. You don't, customer always has to opt in. You can't ever make them feel like Big Brother's watching, right? You know, so evolving that way and then making it a good, seamless, safe, simple, seamless, intuitive, and a consistent experience that builds and gets better over time.
How do you guys look at the aging of the fleet, though? Because all the things we get excited about with new vehicles, you know, you're still looking at a car park that probably has 10, 15 years in, you know, in use. So you've got this kind of overlapping technology rollout where you've got vehicles that are really smart, and we're still going to have vehicles that are fairly dumb, you know, when we hit the period that you're talking about.
Right. And, you know, some of that, you know, the car park's ginormous. That's a technical term, you know, and we'll talk about GORP in a minute. But the car park is ginormous. And it is, you know, I think going forward, one of the cool things about technology and the affordability of that technology is some of the innovation, maybe taking a look at that car park. What can we do? You know, today already, for example, insurance companies are offering plug-in devices or dongles, right, that you can plug in, and they work with, as long as you have certain CAN signals, so they can go back to 2005 or 4. They don't require necessarily all the technology, but they may be combined to a broad-end device. Well, it could have a modem on it in the future. So I think, you know, and we're looking at this, what do customers want? And how do we continue to move this forward in a way that works for everybody? When we talk about autonomous vehicles, there's two big issues. One is the installed car park, because if they aren't talking and part of this, you can't make it work.
I don't agree, but make your second point, and we'll get back to my argument.
That's okay. No, and that's okay. And you know, I mean, that's one challenge, right? And the other challenge is if it's not a, if it's as we phase into it, if the driver has to take over control again, how do you go from I'm not in control to I'm in control?
So that's autonomous to automated.
Autonomous to, you know, and so...
Back to driver.
Back to driver. Yeah. And that handshake, you know, I mean, the airline industry has been dealing that with, you know, autopilot, right? But you still land the plane. And so...
Unless you're that guy who crashed it in San Francisco.
Well, I can't speak to that. But so those are, you know, I mean, there are many other technological and elements that we have to, you know, lots of things to... But, you know, making it work within a system where there are various levels of everything on the road, and then at some point you still have to maybe have the driver take over. How does that work? How does that work safely, securely, every time?
Right.
See, the reason I don't think we need a massive infrastructure investment, it will enhance it. Google's already racked up over 500,000 miles with its cars with zero infrastructure out there whatsoever. You know, spring, summer, fall, and winter, day and night, rain, snow, you name it. They've gone out and driven these cars with no infrastructure whatsoever. And in fact, I would argue that you do not want your autonomous car to rely on the cloud. It has to be able to operate even if the cloud goes down. Because when the earthquake, the hurricane, or whatever it is, the tornado hits.
The hacker.
You got to get out of Dodge. Yeah. Your car better run.
Right. But Google will also say that the as they drive their cars, because we've talked with them, right? It is that transition back to, if something isn't right, the driver has to be ready to go. And so as they do those experiments...
That's not going to work.
But as they do their experiments, John, as they've racked up all those miles, they're very conscious of that. And they're, you know, so as they're doing their testing, they're also ready for someone to take over. Right. So, you know, it's and it's not insurmountable. I mean, that's what's cool about this industry. You get to solve these cool problems.
Yeah. I still believe that, you know, all this hand-wringing over infrastructure, legal issues misses the point that we could eliminate 32,000 fatalities a year just in the United States, 2.5 million injuries a year just in the United States. It's like, what are we waiting for? I mean, the payoff is so, and don't get me wrong, there will be failures, there will be people killed in autonomous cars, systems will go wrong, but the dramatic reduction that we can achieve in a very short amount of time is like, let's get going.
Well, and it still has to be affordable,
though. Supporting it so strongly.
Right. Oh, they're not supporting it nearly enough.
But I'm just saying, they have said numerous times in the last year that this is the key to the next big step in, you know, kind of like seatbelts revolutionize safety.
Well, look, they just came out saying we're all in favor of V2V. We want cars to be able to communicate with one another. It could be standard today right now.
Yeah.
They're just starting. They haven't even written the rules. They're just starting to say, I think this is a good idea.
Yeah, and the cars have the capability.
And we could have every 2014 could be going down the line.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, you know, let's not make it simpler than it is. What frequencies, what bandwidths, all of these things have to be really worked out, set aside, ensured the standards are there, ensured, you know.
Hasn't SAE been working on this? I know the individual car companies have.
Yeah, and you know,
and
it's not just the car companies. It's the carriers. It's the, you know, there's a much larger ecosystem than just the car makers that have to make this happen.
Is there an SAE standard for this kind of communication?
I think they're coming.
It's under development, and they're working it. And, you know, it's always so much easier to sit back and say, you know, why isn't, you know, this should be done, right? It also has to be done in a way that is affordable. It has to work for the consumers. It has to be attainable. It has to have that durability and reliability. So, you know, one of the things we know as an industry is, especially where safety is related, if you push it too hard, too fast, and it doesn't work, well, that's just never going to be accepted. It doesn't mean we slow down, and it doesn't mean we invest heavily. That's what we're doing at Ford. And, yeah, leading the way and helping to drive those standards, but doing it in a way that we know is just required. Airlines can do what? Full redundant systems, right? The cost of that for our consumers, full redundant systems, is just not able to be borne. It adds all that weight to the car, reduces the fuel economy, all those other, you know, competing things that are also good for society. But that's where we're on it. I mean, it's working it, invest in it, lead the way.
Nancy, how big is the issue of liability? And if you look at who would be responsible, automaker, tier one supplier, tier two supplier, if we're talking about connectivity, the infrastructure, a server or something like that. I mean, there's any number of players in something if there was catastrophic failure.
Yeah, you know, I mean... Now, this is Nancy, the engineer, speaking. If we let liability drive us, we'll stop innovating, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it can't be driven by that. It has to really be driven by responsibly solving the problems and doing it in a way that we think works for the customer. Mm-hmm. And that means making it safe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at Ford, you understand liabilities, but, you know, for many years now, we have to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're focused on. We have to just do the right thing.
So that isn't an impediment to development discussions?
No.
Much?
Well, no. We're investing in it. If it were, you wouldn't invest. You'd be working really hard to convince everybody that there's no technological solution instead of investing and applying people to help find one.
Is an accelerator the fact that Bill Ford, this is such a something that's near and dear to his heart, this whole looking at the future of mobility and...
Well, that, you know, that certainly, I mean, for the biggest accelerator is our customers, right? I mean, that's what they're looking for. Bill has a wonderful passion and vision, and I think it's not just Bill. The whole industry understands megacities, you know, what we're up to 23 megacities, and that's 12 million population or more in a given city. You know, that's a, that, you know, and as that goes, the population shifts into the city infrastructure we know is going to continue to increase. Yet people want to be able to have mobility freedom. They want to be able to move and goods and themselves and family for commerce, for social, all the benefits. We have to solve this. You know, I mean, that's so Bill's interest, absolutely. But it's right and fore of critical to the whole industry. There isn't an auto company out there that it's not working on this if they've looked at the trends, right? Because it's important to our customers and we have to help solve it.
And the supply industry is also,
absolutely.
I mean, Continental's put so many miles on its car full.
Yep.
And then
autonomous
they,
car.
On their autonomous
semi-autonomous car.
Yes, their semi-autonomous car. Be careful to say that.
More automated, yeah.
We're seeing, with a lot of these new technologies, we're seeing some pretty revolutionary changes coming, potentially, in the supply chain. You know, carriers, the AT&Ts or the Verizons, they used to be the pipe and conduit. Well, you know, they're now what? They own telematics companies. They're looking at full end-to-end solutions for, telematics and services. And companies like Harman or Continental, they're extending from Tier 1 supplier and these components or subsystems to, let me see if I can do more of this. Cisco, back end, and now they're looking at other things. The auto companies, what role do we play in the future? You know what? It's a real exciting time because there's opportunities, you know, whenever there's and I guess I would view some of these technologies as a true shift, a true, you know, technological shift. And therefore, in those transitions, what do you find? Exactly what we have. Tons of money coming into the venture capital, to the other industries, lots of innovation going on, and lots of change in who does what. And that's okay, you know, because that's going to lead to better solutions.
How easy is it to drive cost out of this development? Mm. We're adding a lot here. You know, LIDAR, radar, camera technology has really gotten a lot more affordable for you guys. But how quickly will we see this become something that really doesn't drive retail prices up?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time, but a lot of it is electronic or electrically enabled.
You've got Moore's Law on your side.
We've got Moore's Law on our side. And with the computing power increasing, I mean, it used to be a single core processor or dual core processor. You're now talking quad. You're now talking processor speeds, memory speeds, and the ability to virtualize or segregate processors simultaneously to be doing different jobs. You know, I mean, whoa. You know, the things in the car today equal what used to be the full room full of, you know, banks of computers, right? And we got it down on one chip.
Right.
So we do have Moore's Law. I think the next generation of opportunity is going to be around integration across subsystems. And so now that you have computing power, instead of having something running, you know, maybe your cluster and heads-up display, well, it runs that, it runs your infotainment system, it runs your body module systems, it's all one major controller. Maybe there's a gateway that handles everything and spins it out. You know, might be Ethernet, might be a totally different non-wireless network, you know. So a wireless network, excuse me. So, you know, there's going to be a new generation of the backbone systems also in the vehicle. What's good about that? Smaller wire sizes, fewer wires, less weight, helps offset maybe a little bit higher cost over here because I don't have to build the suspension to carry as much weight going down the road. Mm. You know, I mean, so I think that integration and then rethinking the vehicle system and architecture, that's where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Look, let's take a very quick break here, and then let's get back to talking about where this is all going. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our great friends at Firestone.
Introducing a car company that's never made a single car. We took the power of a 9-year-old V8 and gave it the impressive handling of Firestone's Destination tire. Now, moms agree, every milk run feels like a victory lap. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Whether it's on television, online, or through social media, AutoLine knows how to effectively get your marketing message to the people you want to reach. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
So, Nance, I want to ask you, where is this all going? You know, here we're talking about all kinds of communication. Really, that's what connectivity is. Communicating, you know, car to car, car to infrastructure, car to company, you're saying, car to whatever it might
right.
be. You've got autonomous cars coming, car sharing programs. You talked about this migration to megacities.
The whole ownership model we haven't talked to.
Where's Ford Motor Company deep into the century? Let's say it's 2080. What kind of company do you think it might end up being?
Oh, man, you'll have to ask somebody at a higher paper. I don't know. I mean, but you know what? I can say that, you know, we're a transportation solution company is where we're likely, that's Nancy. Don't, Alan? I didn't. Mark, Alan.
Yeah, you're not talking for the company.
I'm not
right. Yeah, this is just sort of Nancy
this is
talking.
Nancy.
Right.
You know, I think everything you see, and I'm just thrilled to personally have the opportunity to participate on and honored to do so, is leading us towards really just transportation solutions in an ever changing society that, you know, still allows people. To have that ability to do what they need to do. And those solutions and what they look like, they're going to change. We talk about car sharing. I was on a crowdsourcing discussion today. It, totally cool. You sit back and you're going, wow, crowdsourcing. So, you know, I mean, the whole thing, the mesh and how the ownership model is changing. And you know, you think of geofencing, think of time fencing. And
what do you mean geofencing, time?
Geofencing would be like as you come into a zone, whatever it could be your wearable device or your iPad or your car knows that you've now entered this area. And now, as a result, it's going to ask you, do you want to turn your house on? Do you want this? Your friend's down the street. You've entered the neighborhood. Do you want to know where all your social network is? Do you want to, you know? Oh, CVS is still open. You needed to do this. So as you cross a geography, you can now say within that geography, there's a whole bunch of things I wanted to know once I got there contextually. So that's like a geofence. Lots going on. Geofencing as a software algorithm enables just tons of feature and content and functionality for consumers. And so now think about time fencing. Car sharing is time fencing. You want that asset available when you need it, and so you fence, you end it, and your time zone ends. Now that's end of the next one. So, you know, it's almost like 3D chess. You know, I feel like Mr. Spock sometimes, right? You know, that's how old I am. But you know, I mean, you know, dimensions, you know, are starting to open up, and I think, you know, this. So, what is the company going to be? It's going to be the company that's looking at all of this with new transportation solutions. And it will have different ownership models, probably different supply chain models, different types of manufacturing models. I think it's going to be interesting. All new industries touching and talking today that didn't have to interface in the past. It's like all the industries out there. Consumer electronics is no longer about just the TV. What TV is just the TV anymore? So I think all of this is changing.
How much of the vehicle, has the vehicle transitioned to being an electronic platform that has a mechanical kind of, you know, undercurrent to it? I mean, is the electronic component now the dominant component of a vehicle?
Well, it's becoming increasingly a dominant part of delivering the character and the DNA of the vehicle. Hmm. It certainly isn't the highest cost part of the car, from an investment or material cost standpoint.
Right.
It is becoming increasingly a higher portion of the engineering development, because we can say it's only software, but software, millions of lines of code, validating that in the complexity of the vehicle systems is a very intensive, very engineering intensive element. So more of the character and nature, so, you know, how much, you know, it's what, how much experience and capability do you have in-house for software design, development, integration, integration of new features. We have our X, our platform where we allow folks to innovate, right? And we've enabled the developer community to start to innovate and come forward with ideas. You know, what's that? That's crowdsourcing of ideas and solutions
for
the auto.
To come into Ford.
Into Ford, you know, and...
To develop apps, you're talking about.
To develop apps and stuff. And I heard recently a wonderful story. Interesting. I mean, this is how boundaries will break. Boeing had a bracket for their engines that they wanted some new ideas on how to cost reduce and come up with improvements. They crowdsourced it. They put contests out there, and they ended up with some innovation from outside the U.S., brought forward these ideas that allowed a significant cost reduction. They provided opportunity for engineers on a global basis to help engineer a Boeing part. Now, that's a really cool idea.
Well, your engineers like that, though, because that's kind of like...
You know what? Here's
it's a fuzzy area.
It gets fuzzy, but you know what? I haven't met a group of, you know, it's always the business discussions that slow the engineers down. The engineers, you get engineer to engineer to engineer innovating and coming up with ideas. The energy level goes way up.
Yeah.
And they're cranking. So, you know, I mean, and the next generation of engineers have grown up with this, have grown up with this social total difference versus maybe...
That's a good point.
Old people.
That's a great
like me.
Point. Yeah.
But the other challenge, you talked about the millions of lines of code, but then that therein lies a challenge because there are recalls and things that are, of course, go back to software issues. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to check over.
Yeah,
no kidding.
It's also why, you know, you can do things in the consumer electronics world or consumer product world, and everybody goes, well, you know, cars can't do that. Well, yes, but we have to make sure, especially if safety is affected and functionality and things like this, we have to make sure it's okay, right? And the integrity of the automotive industry in terms of validating and proving that out, we're going to be innovating just as we have in the integrated circuits. You know, there isn't an IC manufacturer out there that says, is it automotive grade or is it consumer electronics grade? As soon as you say, is it auto grade, it has to deliver over a far different temperature range, far more durability, far more reliability, far more failures, far more issues in its process. You know, it's a much, much higher standard. Same is true for the software validation process. It has to be much more so everybody's working on that as well. So we're innovating in the process of making things as well as in the products that we make.
And it changes the engineers you need to hire as well and the mix
it
of
does.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look, this is we got a lot of questions coming in from the audience here. So
for these guys, I hope.
Well, there might be a couple, but they're mostly aimed at you, Nance. So why don't we jump into the questions from the audience here? And I'm not sure where to start, but let's see here. Okay, Wright Knight says, why not connect a low-drag generator to the undriven free-spinning wheels on hybrids or electrics to add more juice to the battery?
We've looked at those. That's actually been a number of ideas looked at. And what you end up finding is end-to-end, the energy consumption is not the right way to go. So, you know, I mean, we've actually looked at a variety of ideas throughout the years. And if you go back almost 100 years, some of that was there. So, but it's really, really understanding the energy flows and all of the conditions and saying net-net, is that delivering a better solution?
And so far, no is
so far, no.
Okay. Dan the Man says, when will Ford pair the new Nano EcoBoost engines with a hybrid powertrain for more fuel economy or a Lincoln performance line?
Of course, if I talk about anything in the future, I get
you'll get
So, you know, and I can't even say, so can't comment on future
can't
products.
Can't comment. You know, Dan but, the man, but whenever they say I can't comment, you're asking the right question.
That's right. But what we always look at is we have engines and performance of those engines combined with different technologies, combined with the weight and vehicle attributes and the customer. And if we have a match that says do that, we'll do it.
Okay, James S. Welling wants to know, is Ford aiming for a NHTSA Level 4 fully autonomous car?
We're aiming for, you know, I really don't want to, we're aiming for a vehicle that meets the customer's expectation on safety. And, you know, just as the safety requirements start at one level and they continue to evolve, Our goal is to continue and be that.
I've never heard this term. NHTSA Level 4?
Yes, yeah, that's what I was saying. They have it broken out into automated, which still has a human component to it, and it goes all the way up. I guess Level 4 is the highest level.
Where you just say, take me to the office or take me home.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, so you always aim at the top. Mm. And you, what does it take? Right?
Yeah. And consumer acceptance will probably be a big part of that, too. I mean, maybe we don't
consumer
want to go that far.
Yeah. And they may not want it to go that far.
The cars will probably do it before consumers are ready to let them do it.
You bet.
And the affordability of that. So they may not want it. They may not be able to afford it. So it's always driven by what the consumer
thinks. Hey, Ben, I see we've got quite a few phone calls coming in. Why don't we bring in the first of those?
Hi, guys. It's Jonathan out in Old Town, New Jersey. I just got a quick question. What radar detector should we buy when all these cars have these radar braking systems like Volvo has? It's setting up my Valentine 1 to go nuts every 10 seconds or something because the car behind me is checking to make sure I'm far enough away or something. It's terrible. So I think they need to set up these radar vehicles for braking and autonomous vehicles in coordination with the radar detector companies, because otherwise they're going to be out of business.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Good question.
Is that right? The radars are triggering the radar detectors?
That's interesting.
I don't know, but I guess, you know, does anybody
Jonathan remember? Knows what he's talking about.
I'm guessing it sounds plausible, certainly is plausible. Does everybody remember when some of the cell phones came out and they caused terrible noises on your
EMC
audio?
EMC issues, yeah.
EMC. And the cars worked.
EMI.
Well, EMI, yeah. And radiated emissions and things like that. And everybody says, well, the car's broken. No, it was a phone that was, you know. So you're absolutely right. Part of this is, again, different sectors now having to interface and design to new... And designed to new requirements. Yep, exactly.
Okay, Liz Hall wants to know, do you see Ford releasing its own mobile phone apps that will work with the car or only working with third-party app developers like Waze?
Well, you know, we've got, of course, a number of apps that we've enabled into the vehicle. We are going forward, if there's a Ford app and that we can do that adds value, we're absolutely going to do it. I mean, because, and that is around, again, that transportation experience. And we have Ford Credit. We have, partnerships and things that we can bring. We lease vehicles. You know, say you had a car that was a lease with a, 15,000-mile limit, and you were driving up, and you got five more months, and you're coming up to 14,500 miles. Geez, maybe you'd like to know. Maybe there's something we can do to help you, because you're driving has changed or something. I think there's a ton of things that we're going to be looking at. And yeah, if a Ford app makes sense, we'll do it. But we aren't going to do thousands of them because that's just confusing.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to throw...
Is that considered not a core thing that you want to do anyway? I mean, do you have to sort of pick your spots?
We have to, you know what, we're looking at apps about where do customers value in the transportation experience, and that we consider core. Where is their value add? Doing apps... additional music apps and things like that, we don't need to do that. It's all around the transportation experience.
Okay, I'm going to throw this next question to Lindsay and Elisa. This comes in from Chris Burgess, and he wants to know, in your opinion, on how many levels did the Super Bowl Bob Dylan ad for the Chrysler 200 not work?
Well, I think I'm not sure how relevant Bob Dylan is to a young audience. So I think that's one level that I'm not sure, you know, they're trying to sell the company, sell the new products, et cetera. Bobby D is kind of 60s and 70s at this point. You know, iconic, no doubt. But I think that's the problem you run into when you've got Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney from that era is, you know, how do they connect with the audience today? Mm-hmm. So that's...
Well, and I have to just say up front that, like, I'm a huge Dylan fan, and my
me too.
My brother, who's a musician, named his daughter Dylan after Dylan. So
what'd you think of the
no bias? Yeah,
him to be objective. I thought it was really nice to hear the guy speak. You know, because last time I was at a concert, he was unintelligible. So
right.
I was just and you know, and
it
I
got
just,
him to stop mumbling. Huh?
Exactly. I just thought it was cool to see the guy. So I guess I'm probably not giving a very intellectual. I mean, I know there's all these, you know, debates going on about you know, did he somehow put down, you know, other industries by promoting? Sometimes an ad doesn't need to go that deep into analysis, you know? Sometimes it can just make you feel a certain way. And I do think at the end, I just thought that was a great plug for American car making.
Yeah, cool.
On a really broad level.
I love those ads because it's, you know, Detroit is a what you see, what you get town. And they didn't try to shoot it on a sunny day. I mean, they're kind of looking down on the city. There's snow, you know, it's cloudy day. They're showing kind of the grittiness of the city. And I like that aspect of it.
Hmm. Cool. Marco Morello says, saw the new Mustang at the Detroit show. Why does it have a VAC gauge on V8 models? I asked Ford reps, and no one could answer the question.
I don't know. I'm assuming for racing application.
Like manifold vacuum?
It I'm just says VAC, V-A-C. That's how he wrote this.
It's a
vacuum gauge?
Uh-huh.
And I'm assuming from a race standpoint that it's required. But you know what? I don't know.
And he says, just on the V8 models, you know, in the old days, he used a VAC gauge as a fuel economy gauge. If, you know, in fact, that's the way that BMW had it for years.
Yeah, the early ones were right off the manifold.
You guys now have gotten me in trouble. I'm going to get back. I'm going to leave here. I'll check my phone, and I'm going to get all this, yo, Joya, here's what it's for.
And I'm going to go, oh, God.
You got a vacuum cleaner in the car.
Yeah.
No, I just know we set it up to be really good for, you know, racing in a variety of conditions. So I'm guessing it's required or it would be useful in that.
Good question.
It is a good question. Carl Neustrand from Birmingham, Alabama says, Nancy, why doesn't Ford do much in the way of cylinder deactivation and stop-start technology? Do they really help, and is it worth the expense?
Well, just to correct that, I mean, we actually do a great deal on cylinder deactivation. And in terms of start-stop, of course, we not only in our electrified products, obviously start-stop, but the Fusion, the Lincoln, and rolling across the portfolio start-stop technology, it does help fuel. We launched a great deal of that also in Europe, even on our manual transmissions and things like that. So start-stop is just one of the smart things to do. And, you know, rolling that into the portfolio as you have the right technology there, to assure the engine starts and smooth and transitions and all of those kinds of things. But well, it's a core part of our portfolio.
Well, putting it on the new F-150, will that be kind of your the biggest volume surge for that technology?
It, you know, in terms of as we roll it out, and it's going to continue to roll out on a variety of elements, of course, our Fusion, we make in Mondeo, we make quite a few of those still today. So it's really quite pervasive across the lineup.
Just to be clear, though, does Ford have a cylinder deactivation engine in production right now, Nancy? Something where cylinders drop off and...
We have engine controls that are controlling all of our cylinders independently with some deactivation, yes.
Hmm. Okay.
In the U.S. markets, or is that in Europe?
Europe?
Because I'm trying to remember any Ford that I remember.
Right. Any here.
Yeah.
In our...
I mean, unless it's you have a different definition of it than we do, because we're thinking of the Chrysler ones where they're, you know, it's a very
a six turns into a four and you're reducing pumping losses.
Yeah, we're doing it in a level
I think that
a level
what they're talking about is where,
they're talking about the six to four. No, not here or in Europe yet.
Okay, we've got another phone call question. Ben, let's bring that one in.
Hi, this is Anton Wallman from Northern California outside of San Francisco. Quick question for the representative of Ford. A tiny, weeny little company called Tesla has managed to build 100 fast electric charging stations around the world. Considering that Ford is such a much, much larger company than Tesla, why isn't Ford spending $2 billion building at least 2,000 or 5,000 of these locations? Much better advertising value. And also on top of that, when is Ford going to come out with a pure electric car that can match or exceed Tesla's rated range of 265 miles? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think from an infrastructure standpoint, for plug-in vehicles today, you know, between our C-Max and our Fusion, of course, we're building more plug-in vehicles than Tesla or Toyota or anybody else at this time. So we're, you know, really, really pleased with that. Rather than focusing on fast charge for plug-in vehicles, we've really focused on making those work well with 110. So, you know, people in their garages, in the normal places, can get a great deal of electric range just by using what infrastructure was available to them already in their home or in communities in a different way. So our view is that plug-in, and what we're seeing in miles is 70 to 80% of those who are driving the plug-in vehicles are using, that's all on electric miles that they typically drive. So, you know, they're getting a lot of electric drive miles out of a much more affordable and different range. Yet, if they choose to go 500 miles, the car can do that. You know, so... you know, we felt that was a from the customers that we work with, which is a much different segmentation than say a Tesla, which is a premium, right, a very expensive vehicle. Since we try to make cars for the mass, you know, we targeted the customer there. In terms of investing in electrical infrastructure, we've bought into the SAE standard, and we've designed our vehicles to work with that. The Tesla vehicles are not produced to that standard. They have a different plug and a different requirement. So, you know, I applaud them for what they're doing. At the same token, one of the big lessons learned out of the 70s and 80s in electric cars was don't make everybody have a unique plug. Don't make unique stations. It becomes a big inhibitor. It strands infrastructure. It makes
so you can only charge Teslas at these stations?
At this point, yeah. So... you know, and the adapters to work with that and make it work on their stations don't exist yet, right? If you know, so to me, one hand you say, okay, and they've done that to make their vehicle accessible, but it really hasn't helped, I think, progress electrified transportation in the way it might have been able to.
Very interesting point. Go to Amelia says, do you think autonomous cars will reduce or eliminate car ownership? Just request a car to pick you up from point A, take you to point B, automatic taxis.
That's what it sounds like.
Wow. You know, I don't know. It could. Maybe it won't. What we see are different attitudes and behaviors occurring across the plane on ownership. And so if it isn't ownership, is it going to be guaranteed minutes, which is a different form of ownership? You know, you're still, people may still want to make sure they can have what they want when they want it. So how you define ownership may change.
It may, and I think it will, but I want my car. I don't want the autonomous car to pull up and somebody spilled the milkshake on the console and a kid puked in the back seat.
For
no, it's like, I don't want this car.
Well, it's like,
I want mine.
A lot of the car sharing programs that aren't, you know, through organizations, but they're, you know, done within communities, you know, just in people of like mind. They do that full list. Do you have cat hair? Do you have this? Do you have that? You know, because they're allergies and all sorts of things. They don't want to deal with something that doesn't meet what they need, right?
But the couple of things that are interesting about the automated, you can still have your own car, but it opens up the world to people who have like vision impairment, you know, the car can take them, people with DUIs.
Yeah. No, that's my line. Now we can go back to drinking and driving. Exactly.
And eliminates parking issues because, you know, you can have your car drop you off and then it can then leave, so you don't have to worry about parking.
No, I think there'll be instant demand for autonomy, and it'll especially come from the elderly population who do not want to drive at night, don't like driving on the freeway, but they're going to go see their grandkids.
Right.
And they will pay for that kind of mobility. A car that can maintain their freedom, you bet they'll pay for it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there an advantage, Nancy, to electrified vehicles with this connectivity? I mean, you're sitting on top of this whole structure at Ford. And, I mean, are there synergies there that maybe the combustion engine conventional vehicle world doesn't have?
There's a greater demand for connectivity if you have an electrified vehicle, and that is to really enable the feedback, charge station location, a number of things to enable your transportation experience to be as seamless and pleasant for you as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So does the electric car provide incremental benefit? Not obvious. There's more about what you can do to enable the consumer experience with an electrified vehicle if it's connected, though.
Got a couple of more electric questions here from Esteban Plaza Jennings. He says, the Department of Energy has set a target of reducing battery costs to $125 per kilowatt hour by 2020. Do you believe that's achievable?
Wow, we've done a lot of...
I'll just make it easy. No one I've talked to has said it's going to happen.
Yeah. A lot of fundamental research on batteries and down to, you know, how much of every material is being used, how many mines are coming online that may have those materials being produced, the scale, what is scale of battery cells, packaging, sensors, all of these things. And so... The dollar per kilowatt hour is always an interesting question. Are you talking about a cell or about the total pack? Because the cells are one element, the pack, and then all the sensing and the controls and the thermal management, all of those things. So you really have to talk about in the sense of a pack, because you don't just have
that's
a
the real
cell.
Cost. Mm-hmm.
And that's the real cost. And I think at this time to say you're going to get down to 125 at a pack level, I haven't seen any roadmaps that get to that. You have to account for the pack.
Esteban goes on to ask, at what price point, dollars per kilowatt hour, will electric vehicles be feasible without large government incentives?
Well, now it's tied to a total value proposition, right? What's your local electricity rate? What's your charge rate? What's your miles that you travel versus the cost of petrol or diesel or other alternative fuels?
And one other thing that's becoming a factor now, residual values.
And then residual value.
Boy, they are plummeting for electric cars, with the exception of the Tesla Model S.
Yeah. Well, and so residual, I mean, that ties to your lease. And so when you look at that full value proposition, what you have to have is the durability, the reliability, the confidence. Remember, the average car age now in the United States is over 9 years.
Oh, average, yeah. I thought it was 11.
Gone up in the last, I was going to say, it was 9 years a couple of years ago. Now it's jumped up over 11 in terms of, and that's in the U.S. in terms of people retaining it, right?
Yeah.
The car age itself on the road is much longer, right? So you suddenly go, oh, okay. So that durability, the reliability with new technologies, that's always going to be a factor that we have to, you know, recognize. And you can't necessarily afford to replace that thing, you know. So that asset really has to work within the vehicle environment.
Yeah.
Got another phone call here. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hi, this is Brian from Georgia. Now that the Ram's EPA mileage numbers have been released with the 28 mile per gallon running on diesel, do you think that Nissan or Ford will be able to match or beat that number with the 2015 F-150? Thank you.
Well, I wish I could answer that question. you know, in terms of a diesel performance, it's always got a great highway performance on fuel economy. City is a different story. Combined is a question. You know, certainly I can only say from a Ford perspective, our goal, one of the key pillars that we look at is fuel economy, fuel efficiency, and we want to continue to be leading in that segment moving forward. So that's our goal.
So I'll ask my colleagues, Elisa, what do you think? Is Ford going to be able to match it? Or what about Nissan? It's coming out with this Cummins diesel in the Titan, or no, the Frontier, right?
In the Titan.
The Titan's a big one. They just announced in Chicago, didn't they? They're putting a diesel in the Frontier as well.
Frontier's the small one.
Yeah,
got to
right.
keep them straight.
Yeah, but I thought they were also putting a Cummins into the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
so. They'd already
right.
announced. But,
so is
it, but I don't know. I mean, I got to believe that Ford is targeting 30 on the highway with their aluminum-bodied truck.
That's what everyone's saying.
Yeah.
Not Nancy, but everyone else is
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. I think that's what they're shooting for, and I really think the whole industry is going to follow Ford with lightweighting. I really do. Because if you look at the 2025 CAFE and the footprint that large trucks have to be in, which is like 32 mpg, you know, multi-speed gearboxes, aerodynamics, et cetera, you still have to get that mass out of the truck. And I think what they've done is take the first, you know, they're in the vanguard of this. But I think everybody's going to follow Ford's lead. I really do. And I think the full sized truck that's 30 mpg capable is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get the same sense that you do.
Yeah.
And I am a truck owner. I have hybrids and I have my truck. And my truck for my horses, and I am so looking forward to getting that new truck.
Have you put your order in yet?
Love it.
Let's see, we've got one more question here then. Goggles Pisano wants to know, can Ford have a system similar to the C7 Corvette's performance data recorder for, say, the Mustang or Fiesta GT? ST.
ST.
You know, the Corvette yep. performance recorder.
I'm sitting here, yeah. The answer is we could.
Ford knows how to do these things, too, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Look, we ought to wrap it all up here. But Nancy Gioia, thanks so much for coming on. What a pleasure.
It's
been great.
Thank you. Great seeing you guys.
Yeah. And Elisa Priddle, great having you too, although the traffic held you back for a little part of the show. But
I needed a little better connectivity to
yeah.
to negotiate that a little better.
And Lindsay, great having you here, man.
Thanks so much,
really
John.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure.
Cool. And want to thank all of you, of course, for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.